I would like to convene the Finance Committee for our first meeting for the session. And we just completed the Ways and Means Committee, and Representative Solberg had to delay introductions until more members arrived, and I think we'll do the same thing this morning, which means that we will move to the second part of the agenda, which is testimony by Bill Marx. I've also asked staff to note the members present as they arrive. So Mr. Marx, if you're ready to begin your testimony, then we'll change the order just a little bit and deal with introductions later in the meeting.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. There's a handout coming around that I'll wait just a minute here until that gets handed out. What I plan to do this morning is just a little bit of an overview of this budget, and for those of you who are in Ways and Means, the state economist, Dr. Tom Stinson, talked a little bit about the revenue forecasting, and so I'm going to start with that, but only spend a little bit of time on this. The way I planned this presentation was to start out with the general fund budget and then to move into the all funds budget if there's time and if we get to that part. So with that, I think most members have the handout. The cover page just has a little bit of an outline here, and most this is set up so that the pages have a graph and then a chart that has backup information to go with it. We just note on the bottom of the cover page, for those of you who are interested in this kind of information and want more of it or want to get updated information when there are new forecasts or budgets out, we have this information on the House of Representatives webpage under the Fiscal Analysis Staff Department tab there. This information, as well as spreadsheets and various other information. Also, the webpage for the Department of Finance I listed here because they have similar type information on their webpage. So with that, members, if you go to pages 1 and 2, there's information on the general fund budget on where state revenues come from. And this is some of the information Dr. Stinson was talking about in the previous committee meeting. This just puts it in a pie chart format. Page 2, the page labeled 2, has the same information, all the numbers for it. And some of the various groupings are grouped together here. A couple points I want to make on this chart. You can see as far as general fund revenue, first of all, for next biennium 2008-2009, we're looking at a base level budget projection of revenue at $33.6 billion for the biennium, for the two fiscal years of next biennium. And just the note here that most of you are familiar with, if you look at this pie chart, you can see that there are two major revenue sources for the general fund. Between the individual income tax and the sales tax make up about three-quarters of the state's general fund revenue in those two categories. So changes that affect those two revenue sources have a major impact on the state's general fund budget. That's not to say other sources don't matter. They do, and we're talking here when we're looking at revenue sources here, roughly a 1% revenue source out of a $33 billion budget is $300 million. So you need to keep in mind that even small revenue sources or changes in them can have a fairly significant impact on the state's budget. So general fund revenues, income and sales tax make up about three-quarters of the total. The page 2 information gives the numbers, the projections for next biennium for all the individual revenue sources there. Pages 3 and 4 outline general fund spending by program. And we're going to look at this two different ways here. I've got these kind of general program categories, and then the next breakout is going to be by House Fiscal Committee. This is generally the way that the budget, the general fund budget expenditures are presented by these type of categories. You can see K-12 education at about 40%. actually, this category includes some of the early childhood programs that would be in education at the 40% level, 39.9%. Health and Human Services at 28.8%. One note here, if you looked at the four big categories in here, if you move around from the upper left-hand part of the pie, property tax aids and credits, education, higher ed, and health and human services, those four areas are 87% of the general fund expenditures. Everything else in the smaller slice there, or the smaller parts of the pie, make up about 13%. And you can see there are quite a few categories there. Page 4 has the numbers that go with that for each year of the biennium. Pages 5 and 6 look at the same information, but are breaking it out by the Health Fiscal Committee structure. This is the first time I've attempted to do this with this structure. There may be some minor changes in the numbers yet, but this is largely the way it looks. This is looking then at the breakout. Essentially, I'd put it this way. Essentially, if we were doing a budget based on the current forecast, a current law level budget, these would be the kinds of target numbers that these committees would be looking at. Obviously, there will be variations from that when budgets and targets are actually done. But this is looking at the current law level of how the structure looks for our current fiscal committees. And you can see there are changes, relatively minor changes in a number of areas, some major ones from the previous one as far as the program level. But these are essentially two ways of looking at the general fund budget from the expenditure side. One note, just wanted to point out here too. This shows a $32.5 billion budget as far as expenditures. The revenue side was 33.6. The additional 1.1 is part of the so-called surplus, or the additional revenue that would still be there to allocate on the spending side. It's not currently allocated in this chart. Mr. Chair, members, those are the charts as far as the general fund goes. I was going to move into all funds at this point, unless there are any questions on the general fund at this point. Yeah.
This would probably be a good time to take a few questions, and I would just remind committee members that this will be a shorter meeting today, being that we're sharing the time with, or have shared it with, Ways and Means. So we'll try to keep the questions short, and we'll, of course, have additional hearings. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, the Health and Human Services combined total here, has it ever been broken out to just health and human services as far as the numbers for both departments, as far as, or has it always been combined?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, you're talking about at an agency level, the Health Department and the Human Services Department as separate numbers? I don't know if I've ever done it in this kind of format. The Health Department General Fund budget is relatively small in the overall total. I can give you the numbers here. The biennial number for the Department of Human Services here would be $9,144,000. For Department of Human Services only is $9,144,000. The Health Department's general fund number for the biennium is $138,000. You can see that the Health Department general fund number is relatively small. Thank you.
The other questions of Mr. Marks at this point? Mr. Marks, I think we're ready to go to step two then.
Mr. Chair, members, then the following pages in here attempt to look at the all funds budget, or what we talked about as all operating funds. Just a couple comments before we go into that. I put the general fund numbers here first because that's going to be what the legislature spends most of its time on, is looking at the general fund budget when we talk about budget targets and appropriation numbers. We're usually talking about the general fund appropriations. They're also the numbers that in finance committees you will spend most of your time on, looking at general fund numbers and allocating that. Those are the numbers where, or those are the parts of the budget where the most flexibility is. and where the legislature has the most options as far as, or discretion as far as spending money. On this chart on page 7, you can see the general fund budget makes up about 60% of the all funds budget. And when we talk about all funds, we're bringing in various other funds. The other biggest category is the federal funds here, which make up about 24% of the total numbers. Federal funds in most cases are coming into the state at appropriation at the federal level. The amount of discretion that the state has on those varies. In many cases, there's very little discretion. The discretion is simply, is the state going to accept them or not accept them? In some cases, there's more flexibility on federal funds, and committees will discuss that in some cases. One note on federal funds is that there is a statutory appropriation of federal funds. By that, we mean there's language in the law that says federal funds are appropriated for the purpose for which they're received. So that federal funds don't have to be appropriated every 2 years in biennial budget bills. The legislature does have the opportunity to review federal funds, and when the governor's budget recommendations are submitted to the legislature, federal funds information will be included with that. The legislature also, legislative committees can discuss those federal funds and have an opportunity to discuss with agencies how the federal funds are being used, and to the extent there is flexibility, what kind of flexibility or what kind of direction the legislature might want to put with those funds. But ultimately, federal funds are, the language in the law gives the governor and state agencies the authority to apply for federal funds, and after legislative review, give the agencies the authority to spend those federal funds. But I do want to point out again, it is a sizable chunk of the money that passes through the state treasury to state agencies and those receiving funds from the state treasury.
Representative San Murphy.
Thank you. The federal funds are part of this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, they are not part of the earlier charts that I went through. The earlier charts were only general fund, which is this 60% chunk up here on the chart. Okay, there's a second handout then that somebody here that provides a little bit more description on these funds. And while that's being passed out, I want to mention a couple others here. Debt service is showing up here in the all funds at 2.2%. That's the money that goes to pay for general obligation bonding. And something a little unique on this one is debt service is also counted in the general fund. Debt service funding is then transferred to a debt service fund and then spent from that debt service fund, and it shows up there on this category. The special revenue fund we'll talk a little bit more about later. It's actually a conglomeration of over 1,000 different accounts of funding, and there's more information on that on the handout coming that I'll mention. But it's a category when, and it's often a case where there's a revenue source. There's a fee, or there's a collection of revenue of some sort, and then that money is being spent on a certain purpose, and that's usually done through the special revenue fund. There are a few exceptions usually done there. I've grouped what I call transportation and transit funds into a category here that makes up 7%. This would include the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, the Trunk Highway Fund, the county and the municipal state aid funds, as well as a couple transit funds. And this would include in 2008 and 2009 now the dedicated revenue from the motor vehicle sales tax that was the projected revenue that was dedicated under the constitutional amendment that was just passed.
Mr. Marks, we have a question. Representative Silver.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks, the debt service, so you have it at 2.2%. Is that of all funds, and how does that, if it is, how does that relate to the kind of the guideline we have of having debt service be within the 3%? And is that of the 3% of the general fund?
Mr. Chair, a good question, and you're on the right track there. The 2.2% is of all funds, so it would be of the $52.4 billion number that we're looking at here. The guideline for debt service is a 3% of the general fund revenues. So that would be referring back to the $33 billion general fund budget.
And Mr. Chairman, do we have that in one of our charts?
Mr. Chair, And Representative Solberg, I believe on page, the chart on page 3, I believe.
Okay, there it is.
Which showed debt service at 2.8% of the general fund currently.
Okay, thank you.
Or forecasted, I'm sorry. The forecasted amount is at the 2.8%.
Mr. Chair, 2 points of clarification. It's a forecast amount, which I think includes 150 additional debt. Is that correct, about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, the current forecast for 2008 and 2009 would assume a bonding bill of approximately $135 million for the 2007 session, and it's, I believe, $650 million for the 2008 session, the bigger bill, and that number, it's in the $650 million range for 2008. I'm not sure that's the exact number.
And, Mr. Chairman, those numbers are incorporated into that 2.8%.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, they are incorporated into the forecast. At the risk of getting too complicated here, there's one other number that, at the time of the November forecast, there was discussion that the state's debt capacity, the ability to bond in the 2008 session, would be in the $960 million range. The difference between the 2.8 that's forecasted, which has a $560 million bonding goal in 2008, and the 900 and some million capacity would be the difference between the 2.8% and the 3%.
Thank you.
Ms. Marks? Okay, Mr. Chair, members, I think, the other thing I was going to mention on page, the last page of the handout has a lot more detail on the all funds budget. Actually, it doesn't have a lot more detail. But, I got ahead of myself here. It's page 8. Page 8 of the handout has a lot more detail. It has the information by fund. And the next handout that I'll cover, and I believe has been handed out now, has a little bit more information on each of these funds. So I'll go into that in a couple minutes. Page 9... is a chart showing the all funds budget, and it says by committee here. That's this is a chart I actually did at the end of session, so it's not as up to date as some of the others. So it's actually the program area one. It's not by the House committee structure, but this breaks it out, the all funds budget out in a the program area. A couple notes on this. When we were looking at the general fund budget, K-12 education was the highest percentage. When we look at the all funds budget, health and human services is the highest percentage, and it's largely because there's a lot of federal money coming through the health and human services area. So the federal money pushes health and human services higher than the education level here. One other point that is kind of interesting on this, in the general fund budget, transportation funding is less than 1%. In the all funds budget, you can see it's about 9%, and that's because most of the funding for transportation is not in the general fund. It's in a number of those other funds. There are various, you can see various changes are in the budget from the general fund to the all funds one, and it's because of the money, the levels of money in those other funds that make up the spending in those areas. And as I mentioned before, the legislature has its most discretion in looking at the general fund budget, but the legislative committee, finance committee, should be reviewing the funding in those other budgets as well. And you can work with fiscal staff on looking at those numbers. Then going to the second handout, this is called Operating Funds in the Consolidated Fund Statement. This is a handout it's actually a year old now. It was put together a year ago, and I haven't had a chance to update it yet. I didn't hand this out so much to look at the numbers in here, but to look at the descriptions of the funds. This information discusses here that there are 36 operating funds. What I was just talking about in the operating funds, the general fund being the biggest one of those. This lists all of those funds, and it's the same funds as what were listed on page 8 of the previous handout, and then gives a little bit of a summary about them, as well as the statutory authority, and then lists the agencies that manage those funds. And I don't want to go through all of these. I want to review a few of them, though, to call your attention to them. The second one in the list, the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. This is the fund that handles the constitutional dedication of the 40% of lottery proceeds. And it's in the neighborhood of the receipts in are in the neighborhood of 55 to 60 million a year. It's going up in the out years. Again, the numbers on here are not the most recent numbers, and also they only go through fiscal year 2007. On the second page, the first one listed on there, the State Government Special Revenue Fund, and then the fourth one down, the Special Revenue Fund. These two funds are ones I kind of mentioned before. These are funds that have what we talk about as a lot of different accounts within them. And by an account, we're talking about a source of revenue and a spending item. The State Government Special Revenue Fund, as an example, has all the health licensing boards. Their operational funds are in that. So, for example, the Board of Pharmacy or the Board of Veterinary Medicine. That board collects fees from the people it licenses, and then it spends money to operate a licensing system do a number of other things out of that office. And that, like the Board of Pharmacy, would be one of the accounts within the State Government Special Revenue Fund. So revenue in from fees, revenue out for expenditure operations of that office. The State Government Special Revenue Fund and the Special Revenue Fund together have over 1,000 accounts that operate like that. Some of them would be others like a board. Some might be one operation within a board. It might be one individual fee or one individual revenue source and one specific spending source. Much of the spending in these accounts, these funds, is what we call statutory appropriations. There's language in the law saying the revenue received for this purpose is appropriated for operation of the board or for a specific purpose. And that will continue if the legislature does nothing in a bill, other than if the legislature changed or amended or repealed that appropriation. Some of the appropriations out of these funds are direct appropriations, by which we mean the legislature has to appropriate the money every 2 years. And the health-related boards would be an example where the money that comes in fees, is appropriated every 2 years for the operation of those boards. So that we have both direct and statutory appropriations in these funds, and some of them get more scrutiny by the legislature than others. They're all authorized in law and all available for the legislature to review, essentially. And there should be information. There's information to some extent in budget books on that, and fiscal staff can get information if it's needed on that as well. The third one down on the second page, I mentioned that one as well, the Healthcare Access Fund. This is the fund that receives revenue from the provider tax and the premium tax, as well as individual premiums from those who are members of Minnesota Care, and then expenditures are for health care, for operation of the Minnesota Care program and other health care purposes. And again, then some of the other information there is a year old. Would mention the second from the bottom one on this page as well, one that has had a considerable amount of discussion in the last couple of years, the Health Impact Fund. This is the fund that receives the 75 cents per pack cigarette fee, and then money is transferred out of this fund to the general fund. So you can see in here the $200 and some million a year essentially is received into that fund, and then at certain points during the year transferred to the general fund, that meeting certain requirements in law or direction in law to do that kind of transfer.
Mr. Marks, Representative Leader had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, I see you list the Cambridge Fund on the breakdown and not here. Do you need statutory authority to close that out? Because it's my impression that's closed and gone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, those funds are closed and gone. The Cambridge funds were funds set up to retire some debt to pay off, to pay off some debt related to a Cambridge Bank court case. I don't believe statutory authority is needed. I think that has been cleaned up already in statute. It's on my other list because That other list has numbers on going back to 1991, and there were numbers in there in a number of those years, and it's been taken off this one because I think that has been cleaned up. I will check, though.
Representative Leader, is that it? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Marks, have we ever discussed the implications? You know, all of our bonding is always backed up by the general fund. Have we ever discussed the implications of doing bonding backed up by some of these special funds?
Mr. Marks.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, there is bonding out of the Trunk Highway Fund as well, and backed up by that. And that would be general obligation bonding. The Cambridge Fund as a...
Mr. Chairman. It's general obligation bonds, but it's backed up by the Trunk Highway Fund, is that...
That's correct.
Okay. Well, that...
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, there has been bonding, for example, the Cambridge funds, but that was revenue bonds as opposed to general obligation bonding. I'm not sure. I'd have to check if there's been discussion about general obligation bonding out of any other funds besides general fund truck highway.
Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, we heard from Mr. Stinson in Ways and Means, and now you. Could you explain the so-called $2.2 billion surplus and break that down to exactly what is the surplus and how much of it actually exists, whether it's ongoing or one time when we're finally all done to a bottom line number? Could you do that?
Mark, are you prepared for that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, I don't suppose I better answer no. Mr. Chair and members, I'll try some writing up here. I don't know if that will work. I don't know how that's going to show up.
It's working.
Okay. The $2 billion number that has been discussed is the sum of the balances projected for fiscal 2006, 2007 of $1,000,038 and 2008-2009 of $1,000,132. That adds up to $2,170,000,000. That's essentially the difference between forecasted revenues and forecasted expenditures for these two biennia. As Dr. Stinson talked about earlier, this is the $1,000,038 is likely to be a more accurate number than the $1,132, just because we have more history on this. Essentially, half of this year is already in the bank, or the first half of the biennium is already done, and we know what the numbers are, as well as the first 6 months of the second year. The $2,170,000,000 is essentially the best guess at this time as to the difference between revenues and spending for the two biennia. The point that a number of people would make as well is that the spending numbers for 08 and 09 do not factor any inflation in most of their numbers. Some of the projections, some of the numbers for the health or the human services area do include inflation because they assume things like changes in provider rates and so on. But for the most part, there's no inflation built in these numbers. When the legislature is looking at appropriations for 2008 and 2009, there's likely to be building some inflation in. There's likely to be building increases in, some of it to recognize inflation and some of it perhaps just increases. So that's where the $2,170,000,000 comes from. The question as to one time and permanent gets to be a much more complicated one, because we usually measure that looking at how much of this spending then can be sustained in the next 2 years, so 2010 and 11. And the number for 2010 and 11 that I need to find here is in the neighborhood of $3.2 billion. It's $3,217 is the current projection on the balance, the difference between spending and revenues in fiscal years 10 and 11. The projection is that there's $3,217,000,000 more of revenue than spending. As far as the one-time nature of this, the question becomes how much spending or revenue changes in the 2007 session, how much of this $2,170,000,000 can be sustained by this amount? And the complicating issue gets into if you look at education spending, for example, if you spent $100 million in 2008 and you said we're going to double that in 2009, what we carry out in 10 and 11 is the second year number, the $200 million. So $300 million of spending this biennium becomes $400 out here. And you can see that not all of, if all of the spending is of that pattern, not all of this could be sustained. So it's not a simple question to say how much is permanent and how much is one time. I know the simple approach that some people have taken is essentially saying, because half of this comes from the current biennium, half of it should be one time, about the $1,038,000,000 should be one time, and this should be ongoing. And that's one guideline that we could look at. But the more complicated question becomes how is the spending or revenue reductions going, how are those going to be done in 2008 and 2009 in order to be sustained in 2010 and 2011? And that's one that the legislature has to discuss. The governor will make recommendations on that, and the legislature needs to discuss that. I'm sorry, that's not a simple or straightforward answer to the question, and I don't think that's what you were looking for, but I think that's perhaps a more straightforward or way to describe it.
Mr. Marks, you're right. It's not a simple or straightforward answer to my question, and you're getting warm. Unfortunately, this committee and Ways and Means will have a series of accounts that are anticipating spending money, and it would be my question as to how much ongoing money, after you factor in inflation, after you factor in the transportation amendment, would be available to those accounts. Now, do you have any idea what that number might be?
Smart.
And whether that number would be quasi-ongoing or quasi-one-time?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, first of all, just on the transportation amendment is already factored into these as far as its effect on the general fund. The inflation numbers, the forecast, the November forecast provided some inflation numbers using the current consumer price index numbers, which were 2.1% for 2008, 1.8% for 2009, 1.8% in 10, and 1.7% in 2011. If those numbers are used for inflation purposes, they would use up in 2008 and 2009, they would use up $990 million of this $2,170,000,000, and then if you build on that in 2010 and 11, those inflation numbers would use up $2,270,000,000 of the $3.2 billion in 10 and 11. This is not very scientific in the sense that it's simply applying the CPI numbers to all the appropriation numbers in the forecast or in the budget, and saying if we were to apply those CPI numbers to all of those, we would use those amounts of the 990 of the 2.17 and 2.2 of the 3.2. When I say they're not very scientific, because that's not the way the budget will get put together. Some areas will get inflationary increases. Some areas will probably get greater than inflationary increases, and some areas may get zero or may even be reduced. And so that then all needs to be factored in to come up with with more precise numbers.
Mr. Marks, it's getting closer. So I'm looking at your numbers, and I'm seeing about $1 billion that is the difference between those two. Is that billion, would you judge that billion to be one-time money, that it is not ongoing? and that it would not be a good idea to build permanent changes in budgets on that billing. This is an opinion, but...
Mr. Marks, Mr. Chair, and Representative Pawlowski, yes, it's an opinion, and I hesitate to get into those things. I think that I think that becomes a fairly complicated issue, in that if you're looking at a billion of spending or revenue changes in 2008 and 2009, those are likely to increase in 10 and 11. So I think the billion in 8 and 9 cannot, if inflation was applied to everything, that billion that's still available in 8 and 9 could not all be permanent or ongoing spending. Some portion of it would have to be one-time type things.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks, that's what I was getting at, that we're looking at very soft numbers here, and relatively small numbers when you're looking at the scope of the budgets that will be before us. And there are a lot of promises being made, particularly this first couple of weeks of session. And I would hope that people would look closely at the numbers and not at the promises.
Mr. Marks, did you have a comment? Go ahead.
Sure. To the point that Representative Block was trying to make, Mr. Marks, you said it wasn't very scientific for you to use the consumer price index numbers. So how scientific were the inflationary revenue numbers that they put on the revenue side? What numbers did they use in inflating the growth of revenue for the state?
Representative Rukavina, I've been reminded that we're being taped, and this is a reminder to everyone, be sure to use your mic, otherwise the viewing audience can't hear the question. So maybe you could just summarize your question real quickly for the viewing audience. Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, to summarize the question is how are the inflationary numbers built into the revenue side of the forecast? I think it'd be probably simple enough to say that the revenue side of the forecast, the use of inflation there is a much more complicated measure, in that it's looking at what's going to happen to people's incomes, what's going to happen to changes in capital gains, for example. It's not simply using a CPI number to come up with a change. It's building all the projected changes into the revenue estimates, and then working from that level of it. So it's a much more sophisticated process. Mr. Chair, while we're on the inflation issue, I just mentioned one other thing, is that the consumer price index numbers are what's provided in the forecast. When people look at these more seriously, there's always a discussion about, is the CPI the correct number to use? There's also a measure of purchases of state and local governments that's provided, which is usually a higher number than the consumer price index. I don't have that handy at the moment, but I know it was a higher number in this November forecast. And the CPI number is a fairly well understood number. There are this other measure is a one that's not as commonly known, but there are other measures out there that some would argue is a more accurate reflection of the government type purchases.
Yeah, in fact, considering that the question came from Representative Rukavina, there's also a separate one for, as he probably is aware, higher education index as well. So you have, as Mr. Marks pointed out, several different indexes you could use either by different accounts or across the board. Mr. Marks, maybe just as a follow-up on the inflation, you and I had a conversation the other day, and just in a general way to clarify, and you bounce off it a little bit, that some inflation was built into the Health and Human Services, and then you mentioned a couple of other areas where inflation would not be built in, and I understand the Department of Finance has used the bottom line number and then used the Consumer Price Index. Bonding, I think, was one example you gave the other day, and were there any others that come to your mind?
Mr. Chair and members, just as a reference point, if anybody has the November forecast or wants to look at this, the data on the Consumer Price Index is on page 8 in there. But the numbers that the Department of Finance provides in the forecast are just taking the bottom line of expenditures and applying the Consumer Price Index to those numbers. And they're saying this is a guideline. This is a way to think about it. If we were actually looking at the spending expenditures in the budget, there are some currently I mentioned the Health and Human Services area, where inflation does get built in by the nature of those expenditures. Some of the healthcare type expenditures factor in provider costs built into a forecast, because they're looking at how much is it going to cost to provide these services in future years. It's not a significantly large part of the budget, but there is that part of it. The reverse of that would be there are some spending items where there'd be no need to build in inflation, and what I mentioned to Mr. Chairman was the debt service appropriation. The debt service appropriation is the best guess as to what the payments are going to be needed to pay principal and interest on the bonds, and there would be no point in adding inflation to that, because we already have the best estimate there. There may be other items like that in the expenditure portion of the forecast. Another one that comes to mind would be that within the elementary secondary education area, there's an appropriation to school districts for debt service aid. That, again, would be of the same type, where that one wouldn't need to build inflation in necessarily. So this is not a precise measure. This is an estimate of the size or the impact that if inflation was added to everything, that it could, the impact it would have on the budget.
Representative McVeigh, were you there?
Representative Solberg.
Just one quick reference again, Mr. Chair and Mr. Marks. Besides inflation being built in, how much is built in what I would call the use of a fund? For instance, schools, attendance, more kids has more expenditure and so forth. Nursing homes, more or less people going to the nursing home, even if we don't inflate the reimbursement, the use of that particular fund. And is that considered in our forecast? And additionally, do we also do that type of what I would say use fund for some of the special funds? Let's say hunting and fishing. Do we forecast how many people are going to buy a hunting license? And that would affect the funds available for appropriations.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, in the general fund, we have a number of what are called forecasted appropriations. Those appropriations are adjusted every forecast, or every forecast builds in changes in enrollments in elementary secondary education, for example, changes in caseloads in the healthcare area. They're appropriations that where the law provides an entitlement or says that we're going to provide this level of a formula allowance in education, for example, or this level of a service in health and human services to all those who meet certain criteria. In elementary secondary education, basically those who show up and enroll in a school, if enrollments go up or enrollments go down, a forecast will adjust appropriations accordingly. In the health and human services area, the same kind of thing. If more people need a certain service in the healthcare area, then the forecasts are adjusted. And then, just a side note on that, there is a bill introduced every year that makes adjustments in the existing appropriations to adjust them for the forecast changes. Those are built, the November forecast built in the most recent estimates in those programs and already assumes that. When we look at these numbers, we're assuming that we're now meeting all the needs for the current expected level of needs in those forecasted programs. And so that's already built in, even though appropriations may not still be at that level. In the non-general fund areas, it gets much more complicated. Many of them are driven by the amount of revenue available. A game and fish fund, for example, appropriations are made based on the number of the estimated dollars in the available in an account or in a fund. That may change depending on how many people buy hunting or fishing licenses throughout a year. So the controlling factor is always that while X dollars may be appropriated, the agency can't spend more than what is in the fund. And so there's a limit on the upper side. If X dollars were appropriated and X plus a certain number of dollars show up because more people buy licenses or something, then that money would carry over and probably be appropriated the next time around. There are a number of many of the special revenue fund type accounts, though, where the language in the law simply says the amount in the account is appropriated to the agency for these purposes. And so to the extent money goes up or down, agencies can spend more or less, depending on what's available. And that's pretty much all controlled by the kind of language that's written in the law when those programs are written and the kind of appropriation, statutory appropriation that's there.
Mr. Marks, why don't we just take a couple of minutes for you to conclude, because I do want to go back to item number 3 on the agenda, which is the introduction of members and staff.
Mr. Chair, that'd be fine. I would just mention that members can look through this handout there. My main point here is to call attention to the different funds that the different operating funds that we have and the purposes for those funds. The information in here is intended to do that, and again, I would caution, as I mentioned, that the numbers are a year old, so with that, I think I'll stop, and if members have questions, they can get back to me later on it.
Okay, I want to thank you, Mr. Marks, and by way of introductions, it was on the agenda, but just in case there's anybody here that doesn't know, Bill Marks is the Chief Fiscal Analyst for the Minnesota House, and it is a nonpartisan department, and Mr. Marks and his staff is available to all members of the legislature. So thank you, Mr. Marks. With that, I want to go to the introductions. Not everyone was here at the beginning of the meeting, so we waited a bit on that, but followed the lead of Ways and Means, and so we're going to do the introductions at the end, but it's better to do it when most folks are here. So we'll begin with our vice chair, and do members first, and then we'll follow with staff. Representative Saylor.
Yep. Representative Saylor.
And maybe for the viewing audience, if you could just maybe mention a town or two in 2B. Not everyone is as informed as the rest of us.
I'm sorry. I just didn't want to take up too much time. Park Rapids and Bagley, Kellyer, Black Duck. Those are a few of them.
And in fact, at one time, Metropolitan Black Duck had, what, two or three members? Two members of the Minnesota House a few years back.
Gene Wiggini is South Minneapolis between Diamond Lake and Lake Nokomis.
Mindy Grayling, I'm 10 minutes north of the Capitol and go from Minneapolis to Rice Street.
I represent Lauren Solberg, District 3B, all of Aiken County and part of Itasca County, Grand Rapids.
Gene Poppy, 27B, Austin.
Brad Finstead, home of Herman the German, Shell's Beer, and Laura Ingalls Wilder, 21B.
Paul Coles, I represent Central and Western, Carver County, and a part of Scott County.
Tom Huntley, District 7A, it's all within the city of Duluth.
Al Jerky, 13B, representing Candiota County and cities Wilmer, New London, Spicer, Atwater, Pennock, Raymond, etc.
Larry Hollis, Cass Hubbard, and Crow Wing Counties, I've got more golf courses and lakes than anyone else.
Carlos Mariani, St. Paul. I have the capital in my district, and I have downtown St. Paul, and I used to have an ethanol plant until a couple of years ago.
I'm Bill Hilty, District 8A, portions of Carlton Pine and St. Louis counties, Cloquet, Moose Lake, Barnum, etc.
I'm Mary Murphy from Hermantown, District 6B. My district goes from Scanlon in Carlton County, in Esco, to Proctor, Hermantown, some townships, and 5 precincts in Duluth on top of the hill.
Michael Paymar, District 64B, St. Paul.
Tony Cornish from Good Thunder. I have approximately 18 cities, although 2,500 or under in Blue Earth, Faribault, Waseca counties, border Iowa.
Representative Bruce Anderson, represent Wright County, Buffalo, Monticello, Clear Lake, Clearwater, and Maple Lake.
Gene Pulowski, Houston, Winona counties.
Let's just stay on the inside.
Leva Walker, South Central Minneapolis, Lake 335W.
Paul Thiessen, Minneapolis, Richfield.
Tom Rukavina, I represent from Buell to Aurora White Lakes on the Iron Range. I have the only real Iron Range district.
That might generate a little debate with a couple of others, so I said. can't argue that.
Okay.
Ron Earhart from most of the real city of Edina.
Alice Hausman, I represent a number of communities in St. Paul, the Midway area, Como Park, St. Anthony Park, and the city of Falcon Heights. If you've come to the state fair, you're in the middle of my district.
Mary Ellen Otremba, 11B, center of Minnesota, Todd County, and part of Douglas.
Bernie Leader at Polk, Red Lake, Marshall, and Pennington counties, and basically my cities are Crookston, East Grand Forks, Warren, and Red Lake Falls.
Phyllis Kahn, around the university.
Joyce Pepin, 32A, the towns of Corcoran, Dayton, Hasson, Hanover, Rogers, Greenfield, and part of Maple Grove.
And are you going to have a new hospital sometime soon?
Yes, we will, with your help, Mr. Chair.
Steve Simon, Hopkins and St. Louis Park.
Pat Garofalo, I'm from Farmington, represent portions of Lakeville as well as rural Dakota and Goodhue counties.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ann Lentusky, Bloomington.
Norris Pollock, Oakdale, Maplewood, Ramsey, Washington County, and 3M's International Headquarters.
Steve Swigum, parts of Winona, Wabasha, and Goodhue counties.
And Representative Swigum will be the lead Republican on the committee, as I understand it.
Tori Westrom, represent District 11A, which is Western Minnesota, Alexandria, Elbow Lake, which is my hometown, and Morris, three communities in my district.
And I'm Lyndon Carlson, and I represent Robbinsdale, Crystal, Golden Valley. And did we get all the members then? By the way, it is a committee of 40, so I've been asked that a couple of times. So we have a large committee here. Not the largest, though, I've chaired. When I had the education committee a few years ago, we had 42 and 44, so I'm going down in size. We'll go with the committee staff now. Joanna.
Hi, my name is Joanna Dornfeld, and I'm your committee administrator.
Mill Polkamp, your committee legislative assistant.
And are there other, I know we've introduced Bill Marks, other fiscal staff that are present? Yeah, I'm going to get the House Research. Well, okay, House Research, me and Kathy started to get up. Yeah, Bill, anybody from your department here that...
I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Higher Education and Workforce Development Committee.
Okay, and then DFL staff? Present, anyone?
I'm David Sullivan with DFL Research.
Ed Warner, Republican Research.
Okay. And... we have some temporary pages today. They'll be assigned to perhaps this committee or some others. We're in a period of transition here, but if you could introduce yourselves, so people begin to get to know you.
My name is Megan Sonberg, and I'm from Lindstrom.
My name is John
Slate.
I live in Minneapolis.
My name is Chris Kramer-Leitz, and I'm from Belle Plaine originally, but I live in Minneapolis.
I'm Ron Rennell. Around the
okay, any other staff that we maybe miss? Okay, with that, we're actually going to adjourn a little bit early today. Our normal adjournment time will be 11:30, and like Representative Solberg mentioned, in Ways and Means, we're going to do our very best to start on time and end on time. With that, our next meeting of this committee, and the time is yet to be announced, but we will be working with Mr. Marks, and we've already had conversations about an overview by the fiscal staff in his department of the various accounts and so on that they are responsible with or for. So with that, meeting adjourned.